you have to get home. Like, you have to get into bed. We have to have sex. So mechanical and so robotic.
Ew. Like, you're going to get the ick about your husband. You don't want to get the ick about your husband when you're trying to have a baby.
You can wake up one day and be like, oh my God, like, I don't even like him anymore. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. In today's episode, we're talking all about relationships while trying to conceive. We talk about the complexity of the dynamics that can happen when you start that journey, whether you begin the process in a really good place or on rocky ground, how month after month of negative pregnancy tests can just shift and erode a relationship, what the different archetypes of relationships can be, the stuff that it brings to the surface. And I talk about what you can actually do to shift that polarity and the dynamic that can exist, and what actionable steps you can give your partner and that you can do yourself so that you can arrive on the other side with a stronger, better, more loving relationships, just like my husband and I did after 10 years of trying to create our family, six of which were trying to conceive. And it's a process, it's a journey, but this is a really good episode. So enjoy.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are going to be talking, well, not we, Leah is going to be telling us about the complex dynamics that can happen between you and your partner when you're trying to conceive, and how to maintain a really good relationship through that, with understanding what is happening, what are the dynamics. Sometimes, you know, we feel things, but we're not acknowledging all of the complexity that's going into it, or the fact that it's normal and that, like, most people are experiencing some level of those feelings, since not a lot of people talk about it. But we are here to tell you this is a very common thing that can occur in a long trying to conceive journey. Here's some things to think about, some things that can help it, and just a lot of the nuance there, so that it maybe takes the shame out of it too. If you're feeling like we are the only people feeling this way during this process, it's like, no, it's just that this is common, and no one wants to talk about all the difficulties on your relationship when you're also having difficulty trying to conceive a baby when that's all you really want. So let's go ahead and dive in.
Yeah, it's such a complex topic, and relationships in general are complex. Sex life is complex. Trying to conceive is complex. And then you throw it all together, and then you have two people's traumas, two people's experiences, two people's everything. And it can be so much harder than even just like your own journey as a woman, maybe navigating hormonal imbalance or whatever. It's just a very complex time. So let's break it down. This is something that there's many levels to a relationship that can become impacted by the trying to conceive journey. And I'm going to be speaking about some of them. And this is not an exhaustive list. I'm sure there are other parts and aspects that I'm going to be missing, you know, where people are like, well, she didn't mention my experience. So just know that I'll be talking about a lot of things, but maybe not talking about every single experience that could possibly happen. But the first thing to talk about is, you know, when we're trying to conceive, it involves having sex for the most part. If you are trying to conceive naturally and you're not doing any sort of, you know, IUI or IVF, there is that part and piece. And there are two different situations I see of working with people, is that sometimes people go into the trying to conceive season very excited. They're very in love. They're very into each other. And then it just kind of, they start doing that more, right? And again, for the lucky couple, it happens quickly and easily, and that doesn't really disrupt anything. For the couple who has more struggle, even if it starts off well, this month after month process of grief and hope and waiting and disappointment and all of the things that start getting wrapped around sex and just what that means and not having a baby, it starts to wear on the relationship, even if it started well, right? Even if the love life started well, it starts to impact our libido, which we'll talk about. But then a lot of times I actually see couples going into the trying to conceive journey already kind of struggling in that department. They're already kind of like not that super intimately connected. Maybe they've been married for a while, or they both are working a lot, and so they're just kind of in their separate spaces, and so they're entering this already on a little bit of rocky ground, and then that just blows it up even more. So whether you're entering trying to conceive in a really good place or a rockier place, this happens sometimes to both situations. And the biggest thing that people always talk about is that sex starts becoming a chore. It is no longer something that is necessarily fun or exciting or this thing that you do because you love each other and there's this beautiful connection. It's like this is a means to an end. We have to have this. I mean, I literally have couples who are like calling their husbands like, you have to get home. Like, you have to get into bed. We have to have sex. Like, that is not the energy that breeds like love and connection. And I've had male patients report that they feel like they're being used. Like, literally, they feel like being used. That they are just a vessel to give her a baby, you know, and that there's nothing more. And for some women, they kind of lose that, again, connection with them as a person and a partner. And they only really ever want to have sex when it's ovulation time because they are so consumed during all the other times with tracking and planning and trying to do all the things that they're trying to do to make sure that this happens. And that can kind of erode and affect them. And then it's a double-edged sword, especially when we talk about libido and desire and sex and fertility, because it's a vicious cycle that plays in on of itself. So if a man is now feeling in a not – like I'm talking about heterosexual couples. Again, if you are a same-sex couple, you are not having sex to try to conceive. So there are other impacts that impact your relationship if that's the case, but – for the most part, same-sex couples obviously go down treatment and they're not necessarily having months and months and months of tons of loss and sadness and all of that. So it's a slightly different situation, but I just want to have that caveat. So in a heterosexual couple where you're having sex to try to conceive, if the man is now feeling kind of demasculinized or just not as connected, then he's not going to be pursuing her in other times as well. And then she feels less desired. And it's just this like vicious cycle that like spirals into a really challenging place. The other thing that happens is your nervous system starts to be kind of shaken, especially when, you know, the safety of what you assumed would happen. Like if you're a woman and you just assumed like, we're just going to have sex, we're going to get pregnant, and that starts to not happen, your nervous system starts to panic and goes on like high alert. And that's the complete opposite nervous system that you need to have desire and to have sex. And then what happens for some women is because they are not in their parasympathetic, they're not in their feminine, they're not in this like really lovey, gushy place, when they have to have sex, it's because of a timeline. It's like, oh, I'm ovulating today. Not because I feel like it, not because I'm like feeling connected to my partner and I'm loved and I just feel all these, not that you're not loved, but I feel like very loving. It's like literally it's the calendar. It says, I just ovulated, we have to have sex. And if you're not ready for that and you're not giving yourself time and space, then you can sometimes have pain because you're not ready and you're not in it and you're literally just having sex. It's so mechanical and so robotic. And then that creates more negative experiences that you're not going to want or crave. So outside of this window of ovulation, your guys' sex life starts to kind of unravel. And that's hard.
It's sad because it's like this thing that was just like maybe and maybe not spontaneous and kind of easy or fun or pleasurable. Yeah. Now there's a job to it and it feels like stressed, panic. Oh, you're going to be out of town. Well, wait a minute. We need to. Da-da-da. And I mean, I have very easy conception and even I fall into this trap like because it just it's heady and it's you're like. Well, and especially if maybe you'd had a loss and then you're trying again or whatever. And it just, I don't know. It's sad how this thing can transform to like a job, a purpose, and how unsexy a job and a purpose is. It kind of reminds me, it's not the same thing because it's even, there's like an element to me. Like when I think about this, it just, I feel like melancholic, like sad. Like that's a, it's a sad feeling. Whereas then like, you know how at the end of pregnancy, they'll say that sex is a really good way to prep for labor and to maybe induce labor and stuff. So then maybe you're doing that again, like where you're having a lot of sex at the end, but it's not because you're necessarily wanting it. You're like, we sort of like need to do this. We sort of have to do this. And it's, and also with your big belly and stuff. And sometimes it's like, you're just laying there and you're like, okay, do the thing because I need your seed, but I don't want to be participating in this.
It has feels a very Handmaid's Tale. It's like, okay, now it's time to like have the sex, you know? It's
yeah.
Like,
and you're, I don't know. It's, what do we do about that?
We will talk about it. There's a lot to do, but we need to talk about what's going on first. The other thing that comes up with couples is hard times often erode the shells that we wear.
That's you know what? I'm thinking of like wind going through those tunnels in that really beautiful red rock area of Utah, and it like erodes the shape. Is that what you're talking about?
Sort of. So write that one down. You're my like real segment person. But hard times erode the shells that we wear. And what I mean by that is sometimes everyone has trauma. Everybody has, even if it's like little T trauma, big T trauma is like something really catastrophic. Little T trauma is just like things happen, you know? We all have stuff. We have insecurities. We have baggage. We have things that bring from our childhood, from past experiences, past relationships. And there's this level that we can kind of keep that under wraps. We can kind of keep it under the surface. And it doesn't necessarily impact things, especially when times are good. You know, it just doesn't bring things up. You're not being triggered. Things are not hard. Challenging times and struggle for some people, like I said, erode that shell that we can put ourselves in, and our stuff starts to rise to the surface. So both partners can have that happen, whether that shows up as insecurity, not feeling like they're good enough, feeling guilt, especially the partner who has been labeled as the quote unquote like infertile person or a person who's struggling, or if someone's just trying to conceive and they don't know that there's infertility, there's less of that. But if you're long into the infertility journey and have discovered like you have PCOS or he has low sperm or whatever, like people will feel guilt, and then the opposite partner can feel resentment. It can bring up all sorts of stuff, you know, trauma of past experiences. And so now you're dealing with that, right? So not only just like the act of sex becoming a chore and that whole dynamic of libido, now you both have these bubbling up things like coming to the surface. And then we talk about the masculine and feminine dynamic, which I talk about all the time in my libido course and just in general, because it impacts things so much. And what happens in the fertility and trying to conceive space is, let's just take a classic heterosexual couple where the woman is a little bit more on the more feminine side and the man is a little bit more on the more masculine side. And again, this doesn't mean boy or girl. Sometimes it's flip-flopped and the woman is more masculine and the man is more feminine. And in those situations, it might not impact your relationship as much as it would if you were the other way. Because the act of trying to conceive and navigating everything and reading and learning and trying to control, and here's all my supplements and here's this routine and we have to do this and this and this, and now I need you to go to the doctor and I need you to do this, and you're basically navigating and controlling and orchestrating everything as the woman, that is inherently putting you in your masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And the man who's like, I don't really know anything about this. Like, I just think we have sex. I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know anything about this. And so they kind of like back away and kind of step into the background or kind of surrender to whatever she's doing. Like, she's the one who's going to the doctor. She's the one who's like doing all this stuff. So I'm just going to kind of like sit back and see what I need to do. But that puts him in his feminine. And so now
you're the worst.
And like the polarity has now shifted. And so again, if your relationship came together and that attraction originally was there because the woman was a little bit more feminine and the man was a little bit more take control, have action. Like, maybe he feels really masculine and control in his job. Maybe he's a finance guy and he's like, oh yeah, I know about this and blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't know anything about fertility. Like, he's not going to be the one who's like, I'm taking control of this, honey. You sit down and let me tell you all the supplements you need to take and I'm going to do all these things. It's like most men are not playing that role. And so it puts the woman more in her masculine and him in his feminine. And so that creates a lack of polarity and or a conflict in your polarity energy that again impacts and erodes the relationship, not only the sexual part of the relationship, but just like the connection part of the relationship. And you start to feel like you're living with your roommate or your mother or your father or whatever.
No, that I think is actually so huge, because you're going to feel like, ew, like you're going to get the ick about your husband and you don't want to get the ick about your husband when you're trying to have a baby.
No ick.
But it is, there's something like, it's sweet, you know, like it's sweet of them to defer. Wes is really good at this. He is inherently masculine, but he can, he defers to my hyper insane control mechanisms that I have about life sometimes. And he defers to me. He lets me do it and have it. And I appreciate that in him. But also, then there's actually a part of me that doesn't really like it, because then I'm in charge and I don't want to be in charge. I want him to be like, to take the lead and the control, whatever, you know. I'm trying to think of an example right now, but it's like, in some it's like there needs to be a flow that can snap back into the functional pattern of where you two and your unique dynamic live, because there will be some women who are inherently more masculine and men who are more feminine, not feminine, but in that energy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they like it. And that's where it works really well. And so then you need to keep it that way, right? Like, mm-hmm. or the vice versa. I feel like most of the time it's going to be vice versa. And so it's like, we don't want to, it can get weird when they're so like supplicated. Is that the right word? Like submissive, I guess, whatever it is, like, to us being like,
maybe. That could be a word.
Yeah. Like, well, you need to do this because I'm doing this and the blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. And like, well, you don't really know because you're not tracking and you don't know my things. And then they're just like, oh my God. Okay. Shit. Like,
yeah. They're like, I don't know what to do. So I actually, in my patient appointment yesterday, had this exact conversation with my patient. She's getting ready to try to conceive for her baby number two. And so I'm going to share what I told her because I thought it was really great and it kind of just like channeled through me and I thought it was really helpful. But first, I'm going to just break down a couple of the different archetype patterns that can happen with relationships. And again, I'm sure there's way more, but these are like a few. So if you're listening, you're like, oh yeah, I fit into this one. So the one I sort of just mentioned was the project manager and the avoider. So this is the partner's tracking everything, doing everything to like the female partner, of just kind of taking control of like, I'm going to manage this project. And I see this mostly in women who are go-getters, who are high achievers, who maybe do have work outside of the home and have been in higher positions of just authority or control, or just they're good at managing projects in general. So fertility just becomes the next project that they're going to manage and that they're going to, you know, do all the things and it's going to be fine. And then the partner kind of becomes the avoider. He withdraws, he shuts down, he just like doesn't really know what to do because this isn't a space where he feels authority. Even if he is a more authoritative kind of guy, this is not a space he feels comfortable in. And or he feels bad or weird or like it's bringing up trauma, he feels insecure, some reason he's like shutting down. So she becomes like, I'm the project manager and you are my little man who I little have sex with like once a month and you do what I say, you know. And it's just, it's this weird dynamic that is created. Not weird, I mean, it's common. I've been in all of these, right? Like I, for so long, I mean, I'm navigating so much with my husband during our infertility journey and mm-hmm. having babies, you know, two babies, losing a baby, like it, mm-hmm. I've been a lot of these, but we've worked through so much. And I just want to have a caveat that we have the best relationship ever. I feel like we are way better than we were in ever any other time in our relationship. And because we are so attentive and determined to thrive in this situation. However, I will say another caveat is that a lot of it is because of who my husband is. And so I'm not saying that like this can be beautiful and perfect with every partner, or like the partners, your partner should be listening to this is what I'm saying. Like give this to your partner so that he understands and knows as well. And I think we have an episode where Mike shares about how to be like the partner and trying to conceive. But if
he,
not,
there's when. An episode where he explains his side of things. I'll link it.
Okay, but we should do another one of like other things that he can do and who you can be, because inherently what I told my patient yesterday is men want to please us. They love us. They want to do good by us, but they might be following the wrong map. And a lot of times it's a map that they're making up in their head based on assumptions or past experiences or modeled behavior that they saw from other men in their life or didn't see from men in their life, that they are trying the best that they can. And you really have to give them the map to follow. Because they're good at following a map, but you have to give it to them. If you don't give it to them, then they don't know how to please you. They don't know what it is that you're looking for and what you want.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with Needed to bring you this episode. Stress is something that many people can experience along the fertility journey, and it's something that influences how they handle oxidative damage. That's why supporting overall cellular health can be super valuable at any stage along the fertility journey. One product I personally love recommending is Needed's A Quality Support. I helped contribute to formulating this product, but even if I hadn't, I would still be confident recommending it because it's so great. It's designed to provide antioxidant and mitochondrial support with ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, ALA, and PQQ. I also love pairing it with Needed's comprehensive prenatal and their CoQ10 for a comprehensive approach. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Okay, back to the show.
Especially if in this like acute moment, things are just different than normal. And it's like, okay, I just think from right now, what I need from you is to be support. Like the way that you could support me the best is X, Y, and Z thing. I think that they would love that. I mean, I would love that if my husband told me, I actually really need you to do these things. It would mean so much to me. I'd be like, oh my God, an insight into your head that I'm always wondering. Like, it would be so nice to just be told that. And it's like, kind of, it's conceptualized in this finite amount of time. Like, we're going through this thing right now. This isn't going to be for the rest of our lives, but like, I need you to sort of show up for me in these various ways. Yes. It would be really helpful. I'm coping with it the best way I can. And then also obviously giving them space too. Like, how does this feel for you? What can I do for you? Like, it's a two-way street. But yeah, I think that's such a good idea. Why do people not do that? It's
I don't know. Yeah. So that was part of what came to me with this patient yesterday. And I'm going to be intertwining it into my Decoding Desire course that's coming out in April, which this might even be past that. I don't know when this episode airs, but it's going to be good. So I'm excited. But basically, okay, so the next archetype are the silent grievers. So this is something where both people are hurting and you're just not sharing. And then emotional distance starts to grow. So it's not really that one is even taking control over the other. It's mostly like you're both sad all the time. And it's just you're not able to – you don't know how to open up to each other and connect. Or you feel guilty. I mean, I had elements of this along our journey where I didn't really want to talk to my husband about how sad I was because it was male factor, you know? And if I brought it up of like how devastated and sad I am and crying all of the time about how we're not getting pregnant – he would then feel really bad because he's like, this is like, I'm doing this to you in a way. It's like, he's not, but he, you know, it's not his fault, but it's just, if his body was different, I wouldn't be having this really hard, sad experience. And so I had to find ways to cope and process with different people, you know, therapists and healers and stuff like that. And then he, for a long time, didn't know how to deal with it either because he wasn't a person who would seek out support. And there were a lot of times when it was just sad. We were both just sad, you know, like I've been the project manager and he's been the avoider. We've both been the silent grievers. It was just sad. The sex on schedule couple, this is where there's a lot of pressure, especially I see this a lot in couples that have a traveling partner. So military, oh God, I can't even tell you the intensity of the pressure that couples feel of like, my husband's home for like 2 months before he leaves again to be deployed. We have to get pregnant right now. And I'm just like, like, I feel the pressure. Like, I feel the intensity. And like, that not only kills, you know, it can kill a lot of things, but just it can, especially for the guy, it's like the performance, like you need to go right now. Like, you have to be ready right now to have sex with me. We have this one time, you know, and there's just a lot of pressure. There's a lot of intensity. And it can build resentment too of like, you have to leave again on another trip. Like, we've only had 2 months to try and now you're going to be gone for 2 months. And like, you know, it starts to be like, do you even care about this? Like, what's going on? And it's tricky when there's a lot of pressure of, we must have sex right now. You know, it's just not, it's not the best dynamic always for people. The other dynamic is the unequal burden dynamic where the woman feels like she's doing everything. So she might not be even in the energy of project manager of dictating and being like, I'm doing this. And like, you just do what I say, you know, kind of thing. It's almost just like, I'm doing everything. You don't seem to be doing anything. You don't seem to care. Like, you're not even, like, do you even want a baby? Like, what? You've done zero initiative. You have not looked into anything. Like, you're just here. And
they're not like making any preconception changes. They're not like drinking less or starting to exercise or do any of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Like, I'm doing everything. I go to a doctor's appointment like every 3 weeks. I'm doing all of these things. I'm doing all this stuff. And it feels like you don't even care, right? It feels like you're not doing anything. It's all falling on me and my shoulders. And that, again, can build resentment. It can bring up stuff. It can bring up your baggage. And so this is such an interesting time in a couple's life if this has happening to them, because not only can it shift the love life and the sex life, it can create these dynamics that are different. It can change the polarity of masculine and feminine, which inherently can create the ick or can create like all sorts of things. And then it brings up all your baggage and all your trauma and all your insecurities. And it's just like, whoa, like if there's any, You know, when, like, the death of a child to me would be the very worst thing in the whole world. I cannot imagine anything worse, like literally nothing worse. And I think it's like 90% of couples who have the death of a child get divorced. And I can totally understand why. Like, that would be so hard. But on a micro level, trying to conceive an infertility is like that, sort of. I mean, this is where people who haven't been through it don't understand that trying to conceive and it not happening, and especially infertility for a long time, and or pregnancy loss, which is like the death of a child, you know, and then going on to continue to try to conceive, it's such a unique experience that a couple goes through that, again, society doesn't know or accept or understand like they would if they actually knew you had a living child who died. And it creates, especially with the longevity of it, such a unique dynamic that if you don't have unique support, it can just unravel and it can be really hard.
Yeah, the different coping mechanisms between people, like that, I've seen it several times, unfortunately, where it, like, maybe one person is just shut down. They're not even trying to deal with their grief. The other person is really wanting to talk about it and move through it. Or maybe somebody's being kind of like dismissive and toxic positivity. And then that's pissing the other person off because they're like, no, this is the worst thing ever. It's like the way that people grieve during that can push them so far away that it's not manageable anymore. And same thing with children with severe disabilities. There's another, statistic is also similar of very high divorce rates. Again, with coping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I know that Wes's family knows that well, and that's so hard. And so I'm not just saying this to be like, oh, if you're trying to conceive, your relationship is doomed. I'm not saying that. I'm bringing up the validity, and I'm validating you if you feel any element of this. But there are so many tools. I'm such a believer that we can heal our body, our mind, our baggage, our trauma. Like, I've seen it, I've experienced it personally, and I'm such a believer of that. But we have to first identify and acknowledge what is truly in front of us, and then get the right support and do the practices and the things that we need. So the last thing I want to mention before I get into what to actually do is also what can breed resentment is just the timelines. A woman, there's biology at play too. We as women, for the most part, I'm generalizing, but once a woman's decided, like, I want to have a baby, it's like more than just a want. It's not like I want to have a piece of cake and if I don't get the cake, I'm going to be really sad. It's like, it is a deep guttural biological drive that it supersedes like everything else. It is primal. It is all consuming. And we think about it and feel it every single moment of every single day. It consumes us.
And you want like a newborn in your arms yesterday. And yeah, to not even be able, not even to be pregnant yet. It's like the timeline, and even like the idea of it being 3 more months before we can do this or we have to do that. It's like, oh my God, it is. It's seriously, it's like the same sort of drive when you see a dog in heat and they're they're acting so crazy, or like a cat in heat, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit less intense because I know they only have that a couple times a year or whatever it is, but it's maternal drive is one of the most powerful forces on earth.
Yes, 100%. And it makes sense because we wouldn't be here, you know, in many ways without it. I mean, obviously things can happen without our consent and that's the case, but the majority of us here have not come in that way. And so that is what's tricky, and that what a man needs to understand and know, as I'm kind of segueing into things, is that for a woman, almost every moment of every day are micro griefs. Like, Easter is coming up, and a woman who's trying to conceive is like, oh, like, I don't have a baby at Easter, and I'm probably, you know, there's a high likelihood I'm not going to have a baby at next Easter, and or it's March, that means I'm not going to have a baby in 2026. Like, there's no chance for me to have a baby born in 2026 in the year of the horse. You know, I mean, I used to be like, oh, my baby's going to be the year of the ox, you know, in the Chinese calendar, the year of the dog, the year of the rat, the year of the whatever. And it's like every single year would go by. It's like, okay, like literally tiny little things like, oh, like my baby's not going to be in the same pod or group as my best friend's kids. And, you know, now this time has gone by, and it's like every single moment, like my period came, like, you know, you're probably like, as a man, like, just think, it might not be on your mind. You had sex 2 weeks ago and you're just dinking around doing your thing, like thinking about whatever, you know, am I going to have a smoothie or an egg for breakfast? And she comes out of the bathroom and she has her period. And it's like the whole world is like crashing around her. And if you don't have that awareness, and if you're not understanding how to validate that she's just going through these micro griefs that feel that are big griefs, like that's a huge grief, right? To like one another month has passed where your period has come and you might not even know it because it's not like she got punched in the face and you're very obviously like, oh my God, are you hurt? What's wrong? Like, how can I help you? It's these silent things that we carry and she just has to, you know, go into the kitchen and make breakfast and like go to work or whatever and like just deal with it while she's like choking back tears and every single thing that she imagined for her life is crashing around her. And if you as her partner either don't know or understand that and know how to show up for her in the way that she needs it, she's going to start resenting you. Even if you don't, you're not doing anything wrong. You're like, I'm literally just making eggs, you know? And then depending on your dynamic, she might escalate into anger and outburst because she doesn't know how to ask for what she wants. So then you make like a snide like comment of like, hey, you know, and you like pinch her butt and she literally just like blows up at you because it's like, do not touch me. Like, I just got my period, you know, like it makes you want to cry, not the like, yeah. I mean, it's just hard, right? Because to be in that space, it's like, he doesn't know. They're like, oh my God, like I didn't know, you know? And then they're upset, then they're fighting. It's like, do you want to go like have sex right now? It's like, no, you don't. And it's just, but you have to, you know, you have to like foster this. We have to try again. Like this month is, you know, another month. And so it's just so hard in that regard, but there's so much that we can do.
Well, and when men too see us like struggling, anybody, like they just want to fix. And it's like, there's nothing you can do besides.
Yeah, or they avoid. Some men also like don't want to see us uncomfortable. So the dynamic that I had with my patient was that she's on these like meds and stuff moving into IVF for various reasons that I won't get into, but she's been very short and very like angry at him. And she's like, I don't know what is going on. I don't understand. And so I had her like talk to me about it. And at the end of the day, what we really broke down is that this has become a polarity issue. And this is like the little nugget I want to share with you on this podcast. Because what happened is, again, she becomes the manager, not out of like they sit down like you do it and I'm going to do this. She just naturally is like going to the appointments and doing the medication and doing the supplements and doing all of the healing things and trying to go to the sauna and blah, 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 and all the stuff and just managing everything. But she's irritable. And so he doesn't know how to show up. And so he's like, oh, I need to get out of her way and just like let her have her thing. And I don't want to be in the way. So he's pulling back. But that is internally, subconsciously angering her more because what she really wants and what she needs is she is trying to step into a season of bringing in another life. And we mentioned this on a previous episode that we just chatted about birth, but how the feminine essence is needed for birth. The feminine essence is needed for conception as well. The woman essence, the energetic piece that allows us to create life, is inherently feminine. There is, we do not conceive in the masculine intensity of control. We conceive in the surrender. We literally receive the seed. We are surrendering to this life creation. And so there's a spiritual and an energetic level that's trying to get us into that space. What's tricky is the feminine can only exist when the masculine container is there to hold the feminine. And so if the male partner or the masculine partner is not showing up in that way, either because he doesn't know to do that or he doesn't know how to do that, she has no choice but to be the masculine. She cannot surrender without that masculine container. And so her anger was showing up because she needs him to step up. She needs him to hold that masculine container for her so she can surrender and relax. But he doesn't know how to do that. He doesn't know to do that. He's, again, following a map that he thinks is the right thing. In his mind, he's making assumptions. Oh, she's angry. I should get out of her way. That's the map I should follow. That's how I have a peaceful relationship. That's how we keep the peace, right? Is that I hide and I like get away from her. When she didn't know what she really needed and how to have this conversation of, no, actually, I need you to be on the phone with our insurance provider trying to figure out why we owe $3,000 for this medication instead of me for 5 hours today. I need you to like take over all these things, not in like a you do it, but like I need you to like literally come in this loving, masculine, embracing way of like, you know what, girl, I've got this. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go out into the park, go do something really beautiful that brings you joy, and just surrender today. I'm holding this for us. I'm holding all of these things that you are holding so that you can relax, because someone has to hold them. Someone has to plan the calendar. Someone has to schedule the appointment. Someone has to argue with the insurance company. Somebody has to do whatever, you know, set the supplement schedule, do the things. Like, it has to get done. And so if your male partner or your masculine partner is not learning or stepping up to know how to do that, it has to get done, so you will. And so that's the first thing. And how I guided her through that, it was, first off, I wanted her to start connecting back to her feminine. To her feminine essence. And she's inherently more of a go-getter like me, more masculine in certain ways. But we all as women in this season can step into that more feminine essence, and we need to. And so I said, when was the last time you, what brings you joy? Like pure bliss. There is no agenda. There is nothing that it is trying to accomplish. It is just joy for the sake of joy. When, like, what would you do if that was the case? And she had a really hard time. She's like, she literally didn't know what to say. And so I was giving her examples. I was like, would you read a book, like a fiction book that has no thing? Would you go to a cafe or go to a restaurant on your own, walk the beach, like go to a museum, like meet with a friend? Like, what would you do if you had 3 hours alone, nothing around you? And keep in mind, she has a toddler. So it's like, it complicates things when you're having more kids. If you were the first time person, you maybe have a little bit more flexibility, but it's challenging. But it's like, you can't make those as excuses. What would you do? And so she really thought about it, and she told me, and she's like, I would like go to a cafe, and I would go and learn something new, like maybe at like a monument or a museum or something, and get a treat on the way home and do all this stuff. And I was like, beautiful. I want you to sit down and write out your ideal dream day of joy, right? Like something that you're like, wow, if I was on vacation, if I flew somewhere and I had no work, no agenda, I was just to do exactly what would make me happy. Write that out. Right? Start to connect with that future version of yourself, that feminine version of yourself. This is the kind of work I do, again, in like my dream life formula and stuff, but start to connect to that person. And then I want you to write out what needs to exist in your household and in your life to allow that to happen. What is the masculine container that must be there so that that can happen? For you to leave for 3 hours during the day and go do this, what needs to happen? Okay, well, my husband or my nanny or somebody needs to make breakfast and feed my child, needs to call the insurance company, needs to blah, 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 needs to, you know, make do the dishes and make dinner and prepare for whatever, needs to call the doctor and do XYZ. Like, make that list of, like, what needs to be around for you to be that version of yourself. And then you look at that. It's like these two idyllic situations, if everything was perfect exactly as you wanted it. And then you write a third list of a list for your partner. This is his map. And you sit down and you have a conversation with him about what you're doing to say, I really need this. This is something I need. I need to be able to step more into my feminine while we are preparing to conceive. And in this situation, this was a short time because she knew she was going into an IVF transfer. But if you're just ongoing trying to conceive, you can do this on a smaller scale. It's not like he needs to do every single thing forever and you don't do anything. But just you start to shift that dynamic of, this is what's realistic that I can do and what I want to do to step more into my feminine, which means this is what I need you to do. And just like I'm doing all the medications, all the supplements, going to all the doctor's appointments, this is your role in us creating this family. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
Well, and it's providing too. It's yes. Men providing in this very like fertility specific way
yes.
to which should actually fulfill him in a way, because it should fulfill that instinct of wanting to provide. And it's just frame shifting a little bit where it's like, this is how you're going to maintain your masculine dynamic in our fertility dynamic. You're going to provide for me in these ways. I'm going to lean back into the feminine in these ways so that we can continue to keep the polarity that we want and need. And like, as it transitions into different phases, because guess what, fellas, like once she has a baby or whoever partner, you're going to be picking up the slack in so many other ways still in just, it's going to transform again. Wes, I'll link the Wes episode where he talks about this, because going through pregnancy and postpartum with somebody changes the way that you as a man have to show up, and it's okay. And it's like a character role change and shift. And this can be that, so that he's still getting his, like the maternal instinct that we were talking about beforehand, how insane that drive is and how it's so powerful and it feels so devastating every time it happens. It's like, for a man, in most instances, if he was not able to enact on that providing instinct, that would eventually wear on him. It would wear him down. He would not feel happy and satisfied and fulfilled. So it's the same sort of thing. And sometimes in these dynamics you've been outlining, like the archetypes, that all kind of goes away in the context of this. And so then, yeah, he isn't satisfied and happy. And then she's doing all the providing she doesn't want to provide for. She wants to just be in her. It's so funny. It's such a cycle that just becomes dysfunctional and needs to be set right. Like the sails of the ship just set right.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because in this situation, I understand that that act of like writing it all down and kind of giving him the map feels kind of masculine, but it's what is required. Again, it's the masculine container that is required for you to be able to step into your feminine. And once he knows the path to follow to be that provider, that masculine presence for you, the loving presence, because if he loves you, he wants to do the best thing. He just doesn't necessarily know what that is, especially in this unknown environment, navigating things that are unknown, navigating your grief and your sadness and all the things. He's not sure what to do. So you give him that framework and that guidance and that map. And the interesting thing is that when he steps into that role, that more masculine control, not control, but just like protective and supportive role, it actually naturally increases his testosterone. Mm-hmm. So when men are in that masculine energy, it boosts testosterone and supports sperm. So the whole,
it's all like, meant to be.
It's all meant to be. I know everyone's like, whatever, women can do anything. We can be firefighters. Like, we don't need men. It's like, whatever. Biologically, no. Like, biologically, in this season, yes, women can do anything. I believe women can literally do anything that they want. We are amazing, powerful beings. But there is this dynamic in the life creation season of our life where the feminine, like, as much as you want to be the one that gives the seed, you are not. You are the one that receives the seed. I don't care if that's, like, what not what you want. That is the biology of it. You are the receiving in the feminine in this fertility space. And the more that you can live in that dynamic, the better things are biologically, meaning he's stepping into his masculine. It boosts his testosterone. It boosts his desire to want to support and protect. It naturally raises your estrogen when you step into the feminine, into the surrender receiving part. When you let him open the door for you, it literally boosts your estrogen, like literally, which is what you need to get pregnant. And it's just, it's so powerful, especially women who have like thin, scanty periods. They are really struggling with that very voluptuous, full feminine feel. Like, doing these kind of practices can help so much to help him shift.
And yeah. And it is reminding me too of the Alison Armstrong book called The Queen's Code. And one of the, it's so, I haven't read the book, but I listened to podcasts about it and I want to read it. It seems so interesting to me. And one of the takeaways that I, the first time I listened to an episode about anything about that book, one like particular sentence that I just decided to experiment with and try was the sentence, whatever you think, like whatever you think is best. And so it was like, she was saying the easiest way to get your man to kind of like flip back into the dynamic of being holding all of these, if you are like tired and burnt out, because I do have the tendency, both of us, we have the tendency to be managing way too many things in our like home life. And it's, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it's dysfunctional control aspects. Like, I want to know about what's happening and I want to be the one controlling it. And like, I'm also thinking about so many things with the kids. It's like, they're myofunctional therapy appointments and they're this, they're that, and they're whatever. But sometimes it just becomes too much and I'm like, I can't do all of this. I can't hold it all because I'm freaking out. I'm overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for a couple of months where I, like, anytime there was a question, anytime he would ask me a question to defer the family dynamic decision to meet. What do you want to eat for dinner? Should we go to this place? What time should we go? I would just say, whatever you think is best, whatever. Yeah. And you could like see the look on his face. It was not conscious, but it was subconscious being like, well, like what? Yeah. Like I have to choose this now, you know?
Yeah.
But it actually helped so much because it took a lot of decision-making away from me. It put it on him. I think he liked it. He appreciated it. We never had like an actual conversation about it. It was sort of my like own decided silent experiment. And I was like, time out. Why would I not always do this? I want you to take all of this on. And it's part of a family dynamic that needs to always maybe be like worked. This is the trying to conceive way. And things will change again once the baby's born, and things will change again once they're a little older, and blah, 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 and all these different stuff. It's like you always have to kind of come back to a way to write the ship. So it's good that you're giving us tools so that we know how to write the ship.
Yeah, I love that tool. And for anyone who does want a good like tool box for it, the Queen's Code is wonderful because it is about how to talk to men, about how to let them step into that space. And what I see a lot, both in myself and in the patients that I see, most of the people I support are millennials. And I feel like our generation struggles with this the most. Again, I bring it back to like feminism all the time, and it's because it's disrupted this dynamic. And I'm not saying that what we have now is wrong. It's just we have to be conscious of it and aware so that we can intentionally shift that polarity when it's necessary. The polarity is necessary around desire and sex. The polarity is necessary around fertility. The polarity is necessary around pregnancy and postpartum and birth, like all of it. Like anytime that there is life creation energy, that polarity is necessary. And so it doesn't mean it has to be forever, but it really does. There has to be a conscious knowing and having tools to know how to shift it. Because what I find is that a lot of millennial couples are really balanced. Like the woman is very balanced in her masculine and feminine. You know, she's feminine, but she also works and she has these, you know, tasks, and she's not just sitting around like a wallflower, just like being like, whatever, like I have no opinion, I have no knowledge. It's like, that is not happening anymore. Like maybe there was a time that happened. Maybe there are still people like that. But for the most part, the people I work with are not that way. They are very capable, amazing women who can do it all. And the men are also more balanced, but they're afraid to step into their masculine because they've been shamed by society, the Me Too movement. They don't know how to behave. They're like, women should be able to do everything. The chivalry of like our society has not been valued as much. So men don't open the doors. They don't take charge. They think that they're, you know, being too aggressive, or like men don't know what to do. And if they don't have a good role model in their family or in their society or their like small community, it is confusing of like, where's the line? When am I being too much? And when is this supportive? When is this healthy? When is this toxic? Like, they don't know.
We're always talking about this in context of the spicy books that we like to read, because it's totally like, they need to read those to be like, this is actually what women want. We actually want you to like, I mean, not, I'm not speaking for every woman here, but it's like, there is a fine line between being dominating and masculine in a sexual dynamic that way, and then they probably feel like rapey, and it's like, no, totally.
What I've noticed in the books that we read sometimes, which people can have all of their own opinions about, whatever, I'll have a whole conversation about it. That's a whole other can of worms to unpack. But what I've noticed when there is any sort of dominating type relationship where it's a healthy form of masculine energy, like I'm going to pick you up and put you on the counter and kiss you. Like I'm not going to wait for you. It's the best. That's masculine energy. But I've noticed that sometimes when there is that dominating relationship, some authors will have another character who is showing the example of the archetype of toxic masculinity.
Yes. Where, so you can see.
Yes. And so I'm thinking of one book in particular where it's like the character is interacting with this man and he's also being controlling, but she is and dominating in an icky way where it's like, you are scary. You are icky. This is not good. I am not like liking this. This is not safe. And it shows the difference. And for obviously when you can be in those nuances and understand, it's very clear of like, oh yeah, these men both are dominating and masculine, but one is toxic and one is empowered and like more of like a, I don't know how you describe
like
it.
Like loving. They're still loving.
Yes, it's like a healthy, loving masculine and this is toxic, because when people don't understand that nuance, they think, oh, a man who takes charge and is controlling is, you know, misogynistic or is a dick, yeah, or rapey or whatever. And it's like, no, there is a difference. And so men, I think we want that.
Totally. Not the misogynistic, rapey one. We want the one that where they're like grabbing your hips and pulling you around and moving like, around and making you do stuff.
Like the best thing a man can do is like, hey, honey, I scheduled a date night for us on Friday. I'm going to, you know, come over. I mean, this is like if you live together, like I'm going to take you out to dinner at 6. I'm excited.
Yeah, be ready. Like,
what? I didn't have to do anything. Like, you're going to take me on a date, you know? And he opens the door and he does all the stuff because that's the masculine container. And she can relax and exhale and she doesn't have to plan or control. She literally just gets to be there. She just gets to be and be beautiful.
Don't even ask her. Don't say, do you want to go on a date on Wednesday night?
No, we're going
literally
on a date.
Literally just plan it. We're going on a date on Wednesday night. I took care of the babysitter. I took care of everything. You don't have to think about anything. Yeah. Because how often is that the case nowadays in modern society? It's not, because it's like there's kids and there's sports and there's baby childcare and there's blah, blah, blah. It's very difficult. I get it. It's super complex and it's still possible. And usually it's, if it's going to happen, it's preceded by a conversation with the both of them, which is fine. But how nice would it be to just have him like step into that role where you're like, wow. And it's not controlling and it's not weird. It's like, gosh, I don't know, just read Fourth Wing and then you'll see.
Yeah, it's so good. And so this is like, I honestly, I don't want to put it all on the men, but that is the masculine. So when I talk about desire and libido, so much of it is actually, it should be on the man. And the woman is the one who comes to try to learn. The woman is the one who's trying to figure it out because she wants the thing, like she wants the baby. But at the end of the day, what we really need is a course or a support for the man and what he needs to do, because inherently it has to come from him, but we have to teach him. So there has to be this piece. So at the end of the day, involving your partner in this conversation is first and foremost. And, you know, what I would say step by step is create this identity of you. Like if polarity feels like it's a part of it, do what I explained, you know, highlight the identity of what your life would be like to have this like beautiful feminine energy. I have a whole course on fertile feminine energy in my membership, but basically what that would look like, what he would need to do, what the container would need to look like for that to become a possibility in logistical terms, and then his map of what to do. Have the conversation with him about this. Teach him about masculine and feminine energy and how you really need him to step into that place. And really come up with logistical things of, okay, things are going to be looking a little different, but I need you to, in this season, take over dealing with our insurance company. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. I need that to be you. Or I need you to manage the calendar. Like, we're going to have a shared calendar and I will input the things that I need to, but I want you to be the one that calls, if you have kids, like the soccer team, and figure out when practices are and blah, blah, blah. Like these are roles that women have always been thrown into, but it's like, why? Like we, you know, and I was telling my patient, I'm like, it's not that you're not doing anything. I want you to lean further into playing with your son and being the nurturer and like cooking muffins and doing these things that are more like feminine essence, because he's doing the dishes and cooking while she is like managing the insurance. And it's like, flip those roles, you know, like just for this time, flip them. And what I told her, I was like, this is so hard because in modern society, what makes a father, so this is like for a couple that's maybe trying to conceive a second time, but just in general, if you are a first time mom trying to conceive, if you have been attracted to your partner because he would make a good dad and a good husband, a lot of times those attributes that we attribute to that are things like he does the dishes, he cleans, he cooks, he like does all of these things kind of like a woman does. Like my husband's like that. But that is more inherently like feminine, which is fine and great. It's like the things that make him a good father. He's so nurturing. He's so loving. You can fall into those dynamics where he now becomes more of that. And you are now the masculine energy controlling and managing all the schedules and all the things. And then the kind of roles flip and reverse. And so you just have to be aware of it. You can both exist doing both of those things, but just knowing and understanding in these little ways. So like what you said, deferring to him, having these date night experiences where there is no baby communication, like a date night where you have a rule. We are not talking about getting pregnant. We are not talking about the baby. We're not talking about anything fertility related. We are connecting with each other with just ourselves and asking him ahead of time, can you please step more into the masculine role? What that looks like, literally, men need it written down. What that looks like is the following. You plan the date. Where it is, you just tell me when it is. You open the door for me. You do all of these things, and I'm going to just sit back and like be this beautiful, amazing feminine essence, and we are going to connect, right? Just that particular popularity.
It reminds me of the reels. This is 100% me. I'm sure it's you too. I actually know it's you too. Like whenever I go anywhere with my husband on a trip or vacation, I don't know anything that's going on. I don't know what time our flights are. I don't know where we're going. I don't know if we have a layover. I don't know. Like we went to San Francisco in the fall for literally 24 hours, not even. I think it was like 22 hours and it was so much fun. We had the best time, but I remember being like, we had to navigate the BART. Well, he had to navigate the BART. And I was just like looking around at this kind of sketch area that we were at in San Francisco. And I was like, if you were just to like disappear, poof, gone, I don't know the first thing that I would do. Like totally, like I am completely lost and turned around. I don't remember where we're even going, but I love that feeling, you know, and there needs to be more of that. It is, I have to say, like, you know, Wes and I are very 50-50 in this sometimes because of the way that we just are both always home around the kids and we have our kids home a lot because they don't go to public school. And so then it's like, we do kind of bounce back and forth with these tasks, but it is so, it does feel so good when it's like, no, your job is like this providing outside thing and with like protection and like you're dealing with all these different tasks and roles. And like, obviously this is very gender role, society, whatever, but it's going to work best in your house with whatever it looks like in your house. Okay. And then I'm doing like these things over here and da da da. But I feel it so clearly when it gets to be too much, when I get anxious and overwhelmed and then about whatever, and then I get more controlling and then I push him away from his role in the dynamics because I'm like, nope, you know what? You're not going to do it as well as I am. I'm going to do it instead. And then I'm kind of resentful for him. He's more feminine. I'm like not attracted. I'm annoyed. I'm mad. And then I'm more anxious and I'm more overwhelmed. And it's just like, golly, it's so clear.
Let's take a moment to hear a word from one of our sponsors. If you are wanting to balance your hormones and support your liver, your digestion, your sleep, your overall health, whether you're preparing for pregnancy or not, you have to check out Earthly Wellness. I love herbal tinctures. When you mix different herbs together, you get a synergistic effect that's even more powerful than if you were to take the herbs alone. And you don't have to take a handful of capsules. Yet finding good blends that are effective and that actually taste good is really hard. So I was thrilled when we discovered Earthly. For hormones and detox support, I would recommend their Liver Love, their Lymphatic Drainage, and their Detox Defense tinctures. To support stress in the immune system, consider their Adaptogenic and Immune Support tincture and their Sleepy Time tincture if you are looking for support with sleep. And they also have a blend called Nourish Her Naturally, which has some of my favorite herbs, such as dandelion, red raspberry leaf, spearmint, and nettles. And it tastes delicious. They even have a magnesium cream that you can rub on your feet at night to support sleep, stress, and your hormones. Their site is incredible. They have so much to offer, and their tinctures are absolutely delicious. Many of them are in a glycerite. My kids absolutely love them. They hold their mouth open like little birdies waiting for their Earthly tinctures. It's so cute. Head to earthly.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 10% on all their different products. You will be amazed at what they have. Earthly.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 10%. Okay, now back to the show. That what you just described is 100% the pattern I see in so many couples. That is exactly it. You're not, I'll handle it myself. I'll do the things. He becomes more feminine. Resentment builds. Libido goes down. Don't want to have sex. He feels insecure. He feels like a failure. That makes him spiral. His testosterone goes down. It's like this whole dynamic. And so, yes, it's like this conversation is at odds with the people who are anti-gender roles. I get that. But it's like there is a part and a piece where for some couples, like this is what is needed to help maintain a relationship in these dynamics. And if you aren't aware that this spiral can happen and that this can appear, then you kind of get blindsided. And if you're not being conscious of it and taking steps to support it, you can wake up one day and be like, oh my God, like I don't even like him anymore. You know, I don't even want this. And that is not my goal for you. So feel into the things that make sense. For you, your relationship dynamic issue might be more of the trauma that's being brought up based on this process. it might be more, and I'm such a huge fan, I talk about this all the time, of therapy, of getting support, of processing your traumas, of processing your childhood, your past, getting into your subconscious, finding therapists that do that, whether that's EMDR, whether that's internal family systems, I love that form of therapy, whether that's hypnosis, if it's talk therapy. I would say personally, I find more benefit with subconscious work than just talk therapy, because if we just knew what it was. I mean, talk therapy is good if you're an external processor and that's how you process the current events of today. But to really get to the root of like what is driving behavior, it's typically living in your subconscious mind. So whatever thing you need to do to get into that subconscious, I think is essential for both of you. And, you know, you process the acute grief. That might be where talk therapy is great, of like, I'm really sad. Let me tell you what happened when my period came, versus why are you having anger that comes up when your husband does X, Y, Z? Like, that is from a subconscious place. And really having both of you get that support, working on this polarity, understanding that, working on your identity about all of it, having specific containers in the week where you talk about fertility. So this is when we sit down and we talk about what needs to happen next. This is our next doctor's appointment. This is what we're doing. Hey, I just met with my doctor and she really wants you to take these supplements. What I would really love for you is if you watch this documentary on products, and I want you to go through and actually get rid of the products that you feel are not a good fit. Like, don't do it for him. Don't go into his cabinet and go through his products and be like, I watched a documentary that said that this cologne is toxic, so I'm going to throw it away. First of all, that's super demasculinizing to him, to be like, she's coming into my space and like taking over. Instead, just like you would with a child, not that they're children, but you empower him to do it. You empower
him. And to be a participant with you alongside this journey. Like, I'm doing my things and I really need you to do your things too. And I expect it to look kind of like this. Like, I want you to actually care. And so take 10 minutes. I'll watch the kids or I'll do whatever the task is so that you can go and clean out your products. We'll decide what we can buy for replacements.
Yeah, exactly. So empowering him to help him take control. And if he's resistant, this happens. I've had patients where this happens. If he is resistant, he doesn't want to take the supplements, he doesn't want to do the things, then you guys need to like really like go to couples therapy, do a thing. Like, are you trying to have a baby and he is not? Like, what is going on? So this is in a relationship where both partners want it, but they're struggling. If you are like, he doesn't even want this, like he's actively told me he doesn't want to have a baby, but we're trying, like that's a whole other deeper conversation, which does come up, you know? And so there's so much to unpack, but just moving through the trying to conceive time without addressing these things, I would say, isn't the best. And what's cool about it is, and what I tell my patients all the time and people in my membership is, especially on the male side, and remind him, one, every man is motivated by different things. If you are motivated by how things work and why things work, that doesn't mean he is. If you are motivated by, well, I want to be alive for my future children. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to have a heart attack at 40. I want to be able to like see my kid gets to get married. That might not be his motivation. You have to tap into what motivates him and use that as his motivation to get curious and open these like open-ended conversations and start to understand what is it that motivates you. For some men, it's like, hey, you know, if you improve your fertility, it'll actually improve your sex life because they're the same. They, you know, they hear that and they're like, what? Like, you're saying if I have higher testosterone that helps my sperm, that actually helps my libido and or that helps my energy. I can work out better. I can like have more drive and feel better in my life. So for them, they're not always motivated by like the conception of the baby. And they might not realize that the work that they do and every single thing that they do does not only just help result in a conception, but it changes their entire health trajectory. And so they're not just being motivated so that you can get pregnant and have a baby, but it's helping you have a healthy family, but also he will be healthier in that regard. And so there's just so many angles that you can take and bring in to help get him on track so that he wants to do the dishes, right? Like, that's a quote from a movie people might know with Vince Vaughn, but you basically are trying to empower him with that and have these open conversations, get to the root of what is blocking and what is getting in the way, and doing some of these exercises and practices to protect that polarity and protect the integrity of why you guys are together in the first place. And the last thing that I'll say around all of this is, just like I said with the fertility, of how that passes along to his health, the work that you do now sets the foundation for parenthood. And if someone doesn't have a trying to conceive journey that is a struggle, a lot of times this stuff shows up once the baby's around and once you're in parenthood and you're having the same dynamic of maybe he doesn't know how to follow the map to step up and be that masculine container for you when you're breastfeeding, and he expects you to do everything when you're trying to take care of a baby. And that then creates anger and resentment and tension. Whereas if you see this trying to conceive time as a precursor, as a gift to get all your baggage up and out, to start practicing these practices that are going to serve you so well once you become a parent. And I know that was the case for Mike and I, that parenthood is really not that hard for us. It's just really not. We just don't have a lot of obstacles or issues. And then we don't really have to deal with like yelling around our kids or dealing with stuff. I mean, our kids don't really have that many tantrums because we don't really have tantrums. We don't get upset. Like, we had our stuff in the trying to conceive time. We worked through so much of it, our communication skills, our baggage, our insecurities, the things that were really hard. We had this beautiful gift of 6 years, you know, plus, to work through this. And so I would see it as a positive of like, how can this be this vehicle of growth for our relationship so that we come out of this stronger, better, more empowered, better parents, better people, healthier people. And it's just not always a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, there's always like some way that we can look at it with a silver lining too, although it's hard at the moment.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, awesome. Wow. Well, thank you for laying all of that out. And I hope you guys learned a lot, because I think this it is not just in this one dynamic. It's something that can be extrapolated out into a lot of different ways. And also, you're not alone. It does change so many things in a long infertility journey, even in a short one, even if it's a very short period of time too, to just to understand that it's not just you and your partner. It's happening to a lot of people. Not everybody, but you're not alone, and there's like actual practical things we can do to work on it too.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you're dreaming of motherhood someday or you're already on the path and it hasn't been going as you imagined, I want you to know that you do not have to do this alone. Consider joining me inside of my Womanhood Wellness membership. You get a custom blueprint unique to your woman essence type, which is where you are right now on the journey. You have access to all of my courses and content, which includes how to boost egg and sperm quality, the energetics of fertility, investigating fertility, optimizing IVF if that's a path you have to go down, navigating pregnancy loss. I have my Essential Foundations course, where you learn all the things that you really need to know to have a thriving hormonal infertility system. You learn the hormone handbook, where I dive deep into all the different hormonal imbalances and what you can do naturally to rebalance them. I have deep dive courses on vaginal microbiome, in detoxing, on mindset. I give you my natural medicine protocols. You have the ability to order labs on your own. You get discounts on supplements and other products. I have organized the community by your season. So if you are breaking up with birth control, you can jump in a chat with women in that exact same season. If you are trying to conceive, or if you are going through pregnancy loss or infertility or IVF or low libido, there is a group of women who are going through the same thing. We also have full community areas like our breakfast club, where every Monday we share what we're having for breakfast to inspire each other, and our daily flow, where we connect as a collective community and do challenges and learn from each other in that way. On top of all of that, I do a monthly live Q&A where you can bring your questions, and they're always recorded so you can listen if you can't make them live. And then I have various calls with other practitioners like Sadie, our amazing personal development coach, and so many others, where you will be able to receive healing and learn other perspectives. Being a member inside Womanhood Wellness also gives you discounts to join my upcoming immersions. Take around 22 women for a month to dive deep into a specific topic like decoding desire, or building your dream life, or navigating painful periods, or navigating unexplained infertility. This is the place that you want to be if you want to know all of the natural root cause and supportive measures that you can take to optimize your womanhood journey and your path to and through motherhood. Head to womanhoodwellness.com
and use code PODCAST to save 20% off your first month. I can't wait to see you inside. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.